Kevin Bay from ChasingTheYield.com. This is the Yield Podcast, or Chasing the Yield. You know what? I'm still not very smooth at this. But anyway, it's the Yield. Week ending June 11, 2021. And I just get right into this, I suppose. You know what? I just wanted to mention that this is a what's called a value for value podcast. And that just means that whatever, if you get something of value out of this podcast, whatever it is that you, you know, whatever number you put on that, what it's worth to you, you can send that in. And I've got a donate link on my website. Or what you can do, if you are using cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin, or using the Lightning Network, you can use some Podcast 2.0 compatible apps. And if you go to newpodcastapps.com, let's see, let me double check and make sure that is correct. Yeah, newpodcastapps.com, and there are some new apps that you can use where you can load some cryptocurrency onto the app itself. And what you do is you stream what they call sats. They're micropayments, and you know, they're basically pennies pennies per minute or whatever. You know, you can set it to be whatever you want in most of these apps. And the one I recommend is called Podfriend. You can use that on the web at podfriend.com, or they have a Windows app and a Mac app. There's a beta app for iOS, and I know there's one for Android as well, but it's not on the App Store yet. And there you can just set, you know, some certain number of sats per minute, and you can also give a little boost if you hear something special that maybe you like. Let's just get into the news. I was reading an article in the Wall Street Journal, and it had to do with balancing portfolios or rebalancing portfolios. And I was wondering, how often do people do it? I've read before that people or financial advisors recommend you rebalance maybe once or twice a year. And you know what I've been doing, at least for the last couple of years that I've had portfolios of any appreciable size, is that I've been doing it, you know, every year, as well as just kind of monitoring how the stocks are doing and making, you know, an adjustment here or there, but not anything crazy. Most everything I just kind of let it sit there and let it do its thing. From the article in the Wall Street Journal, though, they say the case for rebalancing is pretty straightforward. Over time, assets whose prices rise account for a growing proportion of a portfolio's overall value, and those whose prices fall amount to a shrinking share of the portfolio. Rebalancing by selling securities that have risen in value and buying assets whose value has declined restores the investor's desired weighting of various assets within the portfolio. For some, it's an emotional anchor, says Richard M. Rosso, Director of Financial Planning at wealth management company RIA Advisors. Part of the logic behind rebalancing is that it maintains the level of risk the investor is comfortable with by ensuring that the portfolio doesn't skew too far beyond the desired balance between relatively safe investments like highly rated bonds and riskier assets like stocks. So, you know, it's also been on my mind, too, because I did sell a position in Nordic American Tanker because they cut their dividend significantly. So I had to look to see where, what other company could I buy to replace that stock that will keep my yield at a level, at an acceptable level for me. You know, so I did pull the trigger on it. I bought a position in Cross America Partners. Their symbol is CAPL. That's C Charlie, A Apple, P Paul, L. What do they use L for? L is L. So, you know, when I rebalance, right now. It's partly for diversification, but mostly right now I rebalance for yield. So if certain stocks, if they've gone down too much in the dividend that they're paying, depending on how long I've held the stock, you know, you have to kind of weigh it all and you know, whether or not you're losing money on the stock value wise, because my, you know, also my goal is to maintain principal. So, you know, a lot of times if I feel like there's a stock there that I've made that is appreciated in value enough, their stock price has risen enough, but I need to cut that stock loose because it's not paying enough in dividends, you know, I will look for maybe a loser, a stock where maybe I've lost an equal amount of money to balance that out. Also, you know, it depends on what the yield is on that particular stock too, and what its potential is going forward. So this way, if I do sell a stock that has appreciated in value a lot, I can offset that with a stock that has lost a lot of value. So I minimize the tax consequence there. You know, and if I'm replacing it with a position that will pay dividends that balance that out, then, you know, that's generally what I go for. But I'm curious what other people do. If you heard that, that's my dog sliding around on the floor. I'm just curious what other people do. You know, how often do you rebalance? You know, what are the reasons that you rebalance? You know, and does it make you, you know, does it make you uneasy? What are the strategies that you use? You know, drop me a line at mail@chasingtheyield.com. Put a comment on this blog post. This also appears on Facebook. You know, let me know on Twitter. I'm, what the heck is my Twitter? You know what? I should know all of these things, but I just can't remember. Let's see. On Twitter, I'm @yield_chasing. So you can let me know there as well. I also thought it would be interesting to... see what my financial life is in simple pie charts. So I had a blog post earlier in the week, and aside from life insurance, the assets at high risk are also the smallest parts of the pie. So, you know, most of my assets, you know, are in stocks, cash, life insurance, and real estate. Now, you know, real estate and life insurance, those are not, you know, really high risk. Unless I die, then my wife gets everything. But something I like to point out is that I am a person that's debt-free. I use credit cards, but in years past, I've eliminated all massive long-term debt. For personal reasons, it also, being debt free gives a person a certain peace of mind that, you know, say everything, something, you know, really bad happened tomorrow, I don't have the debt that kind of holds me back from being able to move on to something else. You know, I could sell my real estate, you know, and I have enough cash reserves where I could survive for some time. You know, if I have to get another job, I have to get another job. But for right now, the goal is to not. It's to continue to do the things that I want to do that may or may not make me money, but it's not going to be a traditional job. So in my low yield portfolio is 19.81% of my financial pie. The medium yield portfolio is 26.03. The high yield is only 10.67%. Cash that I hold is 17.68%. And I believe that's quite a bit higher than most people do. But I'm, even though I have a lot of holdings in stocks, I am very risk averse. So I keep that large cash cushion just in case. It just gives me the peace of mind of knowing, okay, I have this cash cushion that I could survive off of, you know, for multiple years should something truly go wrong in the world and the economy, you know, and I can ride things out for at least for a period of time before I would have to, you know, maybe go back to a traditional job, you know, start a new business. My real estate is also 20% of my pie, and life insurance consists of 5.61%, and it's a whole life policy that I've been paying into for a long time, where if I would have thought about it way back then when I bought it, I probably wouldn't have done it. I would have done something else. But, you know, at the time, I was maybe 20 years old. So the returns I'm getting at it now are pretty good. It's, I can't remember the exact percentage, but it was like 3.5%, 4% for right now of the returns that I'm getting. So rather than cash it in and move those into something else, it's a relatively low risk investment. So I just keep it going. Now, of the portfolios, the three different portfolios that I hold and the income that it provides me, that's right now it's 100% of my income. I get little bits of income from other little things that I do on the side. But by and large, my income comes strictly from the dividends that I receive from my portfolios. So of that, the low yield, and if you... listen to me before, my low yield portfolio is in an IRA, so it's one that I don't touch. So all those dividends that come in through there, they get reinvested back into the portfolio, and it just continues to grow. That one, if I were to be able to cash out those dividends today, the annual income I would get from that would be 18% of the total. But that 18% right now just gets reinvested. And the medium yield and the high yield, that is my actual monthly cash income. And each of those portfolios gives me 41% of the total dividend pie. Now, it's important to note that the medium yield as part of my total assets is 26.03%. But it provides 41% of my income. My high yield, which is, again, it's more high risk, but it pays much higher dividends. That is only 10.67% of my assets, but yet still pays 41% of my income. So it's a strategy that right now seems to be working out pretty well. That was the change that I made in... that I rebalanced this past week when I got rid of Nordic American Tanker and replaced that with Cross America Partners. That was just to rebalance this pie to make sure my high yield portfolio was providing me enough income. And in that case, when I sold Nordic American Tankers, it worked out pretty well because the stock price had appreciated enough to where it would have equaled the annual dividends that they were going to send prior to their dividend cut. So that way I did not lose any annual income really from that. And right now things are working out pretty well with Cross America Partners. That stock is pretty stable price-wise, and the amount of dividend yield is slightly lower than what was projected from the other company, but it's up there. It's over right now 10%. So I'm just going to keep that and keep watching it and see how that goes. Other news... There's a surge in commodity prices that bringing inflation fears. And you've been seeing this a lot, and I've said it last couple of weeks that, yes, inflation is up, but I believe it's up because of, you know, pandemic related pressures where, you know, we were almost in a deflationary period where prices were dropping across the board because there was no economic activity. So now economic activity has picked up quite a bit, and the federal government's pumped a bunch of money in. So there's a lot of money out there chasing very little supply. So prices are headed up, at least in the short term. Hopefully it doesn't turn into a long-term problem. Which brings us to the price of oil, where options traders seem to be betting that oil is going to hit $100 per barrel. That's not a good thing. I remember not that long ago when it was like $150 a barrel and we were paying $4 per gallon of gas, at least when I was living in Illinois. And at that point in time, my wife and I, we worked in the same office. So immediately once the price of a gallon of gasoline, you know, got to like $3.50, a little over $3, you know, which is, it's approaching pretty close to that now. But you know, once it hit $3.50, we just scrapped driving separately. You know, it was a convenience to be able to drive separate because then, you know, normally I would work a little bit later than she would, so she could get off and then go do her thing, and I could stay behind and continue working. You know, but just to save money, because it was just ridiculous to for both of us to drive to the same office and spend that much cash on gas. But from the Wall Street Journal, they say owners of $100 options, now the most widely owned call contracts on the New York Mercantile Exchange, are making a leveraged bet that oil prices will hurtle higher after already surging more than 40% this year. The roaring rally, goosed by thawing coronavirus restrictions, has lifted prices to their highest level since 2018, almost $70 a barrel, and average U.S. gasoline prices above $3 a gallon, according to Gas Buddy. I am not looking forward to high gas prices. Let's see here. The U.S. banks. U.S. banks, they don't want business to keep depositing cash. You know, another story out of the Wall Street Journal where they say U.S. companies are holding onto billions of dollars in cash and they're not sure what they want to do with it. When the coronavirus pandemic hit last year, corporate executives rushed to raise money. Banks have been holding that cash ever since because companies are reluctant to borrow from them. They can't turn it into income-generating loans that has weighed on banks' profit margins, and some have started pushing corporate customers to spend the cash on their businesses or move it elsewhere. You know, if I was in business too, I, you know, like I do personally, I would hold a giant cash cushion, especially when you don't know whether or not the government plans on shutting you down should something happen, you know, with related to COVID cases. If COVID cases pick up rapidly, you know, government can walk in and shut you down, and then what are you going to do? You need to survive. So it's, I guess it's a problem, you know, but also, I would be having some lines of credit because with money being so cheap, you know, you could invest the cash that you're holding, at least a good portion of it, and then, you know, probably make more than the interest that you would be paying on a loan these days. But that's also something to watch. Inflation. There's a story, another story in the Wall Street Journal that inflation surged in May, the highest rate in 13 years. You know, it's, I think we're going to see a whole bunch of these stories for a little while now. So, I moved from Illinois back in 2020. I officially moved here in late 2020 to Georgia from Illinois. I was living in the northern suburbs of Chicago. And because I've adopted this early retirement lifestyle, you know, I had to assess what our annual expenses are. You know, try to get our fixed expenses as low as I possibly could. So that way, if I do need to work or whatever, if I could figure out a way that, you know, it wouldn't be that difficult to manage my portfolios and keep us solvent and not lose our principal while we're in this early retirement phase until Social Security kicks in, you know, that will provide some extra cash. You know, so, you know, my goal was to survive my next 10, 15 years at minimum, living a more modest lifestyle. So we, you know, I researched some states, and originally I was going to go to North Carolina. And then the pandemic hit, airlines cut their routes, and I didn't want to be in a smaller state, in a smaller city, where it was going to be difficult to fly out of, because my son lives in Boston, my daughter, right now, she's in Mexico, my wife's parent lives in California, her family's in California. So if we want to fly somewhere, you know, and we like to go to Europe, you know, once or twice a year. So if we want to go somewhere, I didn't want to move too far away from a major airport. So that's why Atlanta fell on my radar, because, you know, Hartsfield competes with O'Hare Airport to be the busiest airport in the country, if not the world, from time to time. So, and it turns out that it was a pretty decent decision, because GoBankingRates.com, they did a little analysis of all 50 states and determined where you can live out your retirement years. They were looking for to try to hit $45,000. Where can you go and live, you know, with your fixed expenses around $45,000? And Georgia happened to be in that list. So they looked at 8 states that hit that mark, and there was New Mexico, Alabama, Georgia, Missouri, Kansas, Arkansas, Oklahoma, and Mississippi. And in Georgia, what they found is that housing costs come in at around $7,000, $69.59, they say around $7,000, which is fourth best in the nation, 28.7% below the U.S. average. So, and when you drive around this area, you can see that there's a lot of 55-plus communities here, a ton of them. So when they looked at this, they saw that all of the states, it's concentrated in the South. Now, they also have Missouri and New Mexico. You know, Missouri is, it's technically the Midwest, but somebody from Illinois, you know, Missouri really is the South to us. So to me, I can put most of Missouri in the South. And New Mexico is Southwest, obviously, and so is Oklahoma and Arkansas. So, you know, it's not too bad that what do the Southern states have? What do they do that lowers the cost of living here so much that it is appealing to retire? So they rounded out the bottom of the rankings. And the states that were on the bottom that cost the most are Hawaii and D.C. and California. All told, you'll need over $65,000 per year in 6 states. Hawaii and D.C. are the lone states to break $70,000 in annual expenditures, and they do so by a wide margin. Over $28,000 for Hawaii and almost $11,000 for D.C., you'll spend nearly $56,000 more each year to make the jump from number one Mississippi to dead last Hawaii, where it costs retirees a whopping $98,582 each year. Hawaii seems to be a terrible place to retire. They might like the weather, and if you like those tropical waves, you can go there. It's already hot enough here in Georgia. I don't think I would like it in Hawaii. And let's see, some stock news. Nucor Corporation announced this week that it had signed a definitive purchase agreement to acquire Cornerstone Building Brands' insulated metal panels business for a cash purchase price of $1 billion, or approximately 10 times pre-pandemic EBITDA, inclusive of expected synergies. I don't know exactly what that last bit meant. Anyway, adjusting for the net present value of associated tax benefits, the realized effective purchase price for Nucor is approximately $900 million. 3M has worked with U.S. Marshals in the Eastern District of Kentucky to stop the sale of more than 1 million suspected fake N95 respirators as part of the company's continuing global effort to combat pandemic fraud, counterfeiting, and price gouging. Eastman Chemical, a specialty chemicals provider, they signed a deal to sell its global tire additives business to One Rock Capital Partners for $800 million, subject to working capital and other adjustments upon closure. Shares fell 1.3% to close $126.74 on June 9th. The deal, subject to certain regulatory and closing conditions, is expected to close in the second half of 2021. And did you know that June is National Potty Training Awareness Month? I didn't know that. I'd like to know who submitted that into Congress. Anyway, Kimberly Clark, the makers of pull-ups, from a press release they put out, they say they understand how challenging potty training can be for both parents and their kids. In fact, it can be such a challenge that parents ranked a pant that makes potty training as fun and easy as possible as the number one benefit a training pant brand could provide. Try to say that five times fast. Training pant brand. As the best-selling training pant in North America, Pull-Ups understands parents' needs and is proud to debut upgraded features that make potty training fun, fast, and easy with new Disney music-themed graphics that fade when wet to help teach kids to stay dry. And there's like a 15-second commercial here from them. Can I play it?
In a world where potty training is fun, fast, and easy, only Pull-Ups have Disney graphics that fade when wet to teach big kids to stay dry. So they're motivated to keep the music going.
I'm a big kid now.
So if you have a toddler that's potty training, buy some Pull-Ups. The funny thing about this, too, is that they have also integrated this with Amazon's Echo smart device. So you can tell it to play music or do something that integrates with these pull-up diapers, or pant, as they like to call them. Either way, I don't know. I never heard of that. It was funny. Portfolio update. This week, my low-yield portfolio was down 0.56%, but for the month, still up 0.61%. The medium-yield portfolio is up 0.54%, and for the month, up 1.63%. My high yield portfolio for the week is up 1.45%. And for the week was up 1.45%. And for the month, it is up 2.64%. And I believe that's mostly due to the rise in energy prices and the price of oil. That portfolio is heavily weighted in both financials and energy stocks. Let's see, dividend changes. Target announced its next dividend of 90 cents per share, 32% increase over their previous payout of 68 cents. Caterpillar announced its next dividend of $1.11 per share, 7.8% increase over their previous payout of $1.03. Nucor announced its next dividend of 40.5 cents per share, in line with their previous payout. Franklin Resources announced their dividend of 0.28 cents per share, or 28 cents per share, rather, in line with their previous payout. So I'd just like to remind you that this is a podcasting 2.0 compatible podcast, and when you're listening to this, you should be able to see transcripts, chapters, and chapter images. They will accompany each episode. The transcript is usually available a little bit later today after I publish, and the chapters and chapter images should usually be available the following day. It's just a little more work to make chapters and chapter images, but so that way you can see if there are any charts or anything that you need to see, you will be able to follow along. And you know what? I've been playing a pre-recorded version of my disclaimer, but I really kind of hate it. So you know, I have a disclaimer on my website because I am not a registered investment advisor or broker or dealer. I'm just an amateur investor that manages my own money portfolio. So everything you hear on this podcast or read on my website, assume that I may have a position in it, I may be considering buying stock in that, and that what I'm providing is merely information about what I'm doing for myself, and it's not a recommendation for anybody else to do anything. You know, you should always consult a licensed professional if you are looking to put your money in the stock market. You know, I did consult with professionals long before I decided to do it on my own, you know, for various reasons. You have to pay, you know, fees and stuff, and I'm looking to see if I can hopefully be smart enough to manage my own portfolios without losing my shirt. So there's a disclaimer on my website. There will be a disclaimer at the bottom of each and every podcast blog post. But essentially, you know, I'll try to figure out a shorter way to do this. You know, that's not so ridiculous. But I kind of hated listening to that drone on about, you know, how you shouldn't basically follow along with anything that I'm saying. So just as it goes, I invest for myself. Anything I mention on this podcast about different companies, I could be invested in them. You know, I may be thinking about investing in them. I may be thinking about selling them. So, but I do list all of my holdings, each company, on my on the portfolio section of my website. And I try to, you know, all the news items that I talk about all have to do with companies and I guess industries, sectors that I'm invested in. So just let that be known. Invest at your own risk, essentially. And I think that's all I've got for this week. Let's see then. Yep, that's all I've got here. So celebrate Potty Training Awareness Month with your toddler of choice. Hopefully if you are in that period of life where you're potty training, it's going smoothly. It's not always the happiest time for people, I know, but I found it fun. So, and what does that say about me? Anyway, have a good week. Talk to you next Saturday.